Chapter 13.
Knoxville, Tennessee, United States of America, Sol 3, 2200 hours EDT, Monday, September 28, 2009 AD. The massive cannon belched in flame, and that was it. The shot had left too fast for the human eye to follow. The main view screen, though, was slave to a tracking camera that could manage a view of the projectile as it flew through the air, and everyone let out a sigh of relief at still being there. Next to the image was a shot clock that estimated exit of rounds and detonation. The round was smart in that it determined its location and height to lay down its lethal cargo precisely, and the only actual drop that was visible was the first. But after the first submunition ejection, a detonation clock started ticking. 7, 6, Castanuelo said. Damn, I wanted to be outside to watch this. Could we see it? President Carson asked. They'll see this in Pennsylvania. Horner suddenly opened a metal case and ripped out his AID. O'Neill, splash in 1 second. At the warning, O'Neill just shrugged as well as he could inside his armor. He had been tossed around by, Jesus, he lost count, at least 5 nukes in his time. Not to mention being buried in a building by a near-nuclear-class explosion, run over by a Shiva gun, twice on that one, and had various and sundry other unpleasant items occur while he was in a suit. Then there was that poor bastard Buckley who had a space cruiser fall on him. Frankly, being buried 5 meters in the ground at ground zero of a 2-megaton nuclear explosion wasn't anywhere near the bottom of his experiences. It was sort of comforting in a way. Gotcha, he said, flipping frequencies to internal. Battalion, splash over. There was a brief rumble, high-frequency ground shocks that preceded the impact, but in less than a second after the first shudder, the ground began to spasm around his suit. The shocks went on for about 5 seconds, about as bad driving a Jeep across rough ground, and then it was done. That's it? Someone queried on her general frequency. Grandpa? Callie said softly, looking up at the stranger. Yes, sweetie, he replied, stepping forward and ruffling her hair. It's really me, sort of, I guess. But you, I thought... Dead? He said with a snort. Well, yeah. Well, there's a... crab around here that can explain it better. Basically, the Galactics sort of consider death to be not quite the is or isn't thing that humans perceive. So were you or weren't you? Callie asked. Callie? Princess Bride? Oh, so you were mostly dead. Bingo. I think I was flatlined, if that's what you mean. But the Hemet got to me in time to administer hibernazine, and then the crab here restarted me. Callie looked at him again and shook her head. So are you you?
I think so, Papa said, shrugging his shoulders.
I think there are some holes in my memory. I'm younger, though. Strong. It feels amazingly good.
You're not the only one, Callie said. You should see Sherry. You'd pop your shorts.
Sherry? Long story. I didn't understand all of it, but they survived and got out of the herb.
Papa O'Neill nodded and then frowned.
Out of the herb? Survived?
You didn't know that Franklin Herb was gone, Callie asked? Or that the Posleen are all down the valley?
I've been out of it for a few days. What's happening?
He looked around at the cyber team who had started to stow their gear.
And are these white hats or black?
White, I think, Callie said.
And we're about to get hit with a nu- Oh, shit, he said, shaking his head. Another one?
Something about the way he said it caused Callie to burst into giggles that led inevitably to a belly laugh, and then she found herself crying and holding her sides, unable to stop laughing.
Yeah, she gasped after nearly a minute, wiping her eyes and at the snot running out of her nose.
Another one. As she said it, the floor began to rumble. Pruitt maneuvered the pack out of the bowels of the gun and swung it over to Metal Storm 9. 9, for some reason, had done a double fire at some point and was flat out of packs. Getting more up fast enough would be tough. The job wasn't particularly fun. The Posleen had noticed the Metal Storms and were trying, at very long range, to successfully engage them. So stray rounds, railgun, hypervelocity missiles, and plasma fire were flying by on a regular basis. But, on the other hand, at his height he was pretty sure he had the best view of anyone in the battle.
And it was one hell of a view. The battle was intense.
The infantry had moved back into position on both sides, although at a fair distance and in the twilight their red traces could be seen flickering through the darkness, striking, disappearing, and bouncing off into the distance. And, of course, the continuous rain of artillery was fascinating. Then, at intervals, the metal storms would open up and spit liquid fire into the valley. And, all the while, the Puzzling were filling the air with streams of plasma. Really spectacular. As he thought that, a bright flash to his right over the mountains caused him to look up from the monitors. Before his head could even come up, the entire horizon behind the mountains flashed bright white in the lightning ripple of strobes, as if Klieg lights the size of a state had been flicked on and then off, lighting up the valley for almost 4 seconds as if it were bright daylight. He threw up his arm against the light, but it was too late to help. Each of the blasts was a nuclear fireball, and in continuous stream of flashes, he could see mushroom clouds rising even as the last light bulb winked out. It was as if the world to the south had been consumed by a sun and then gone back to black. "Holy shit," he muttered, his eyes watering as ground rumble caused the Shiva to sway back and forth. "I've got to redefine my definition of spectacular." He sat, shaking his head, trying to get some night vision, hell, any vision back, and then gave up. "Holy shit." Callie stopped laughing as the rumble died away and then grinned at her grandfather. "So, are there any cards in this tub?"
"As if I needed to lose money on top of everything else," Papa O'Neill said with an answering grin. "Damn, granddaughter, it's good to see your face again."
Within the cache, the impacts caused one corner of the container to buckle and Billy to slip out of Sherry's arms, and then it returned to the silence of a tomb.
"Up and at 'em!" O'Neill bellowed over the battalion frequency. "Head for the gap!"
He put actions to words, scrabbling at the dirt above him and pushing down with his feet. It was a bare 15 feet to the surface, but it still took time, time he was afraid they might not have. Finally, he saw an opening above him and popped his head out to look around at total devastation. As far as the eye could see, and from the edge of the mountain, that was a fair distance, there was nothing but scrub dirt. Not a stick, not a house, not a scrap of vegetation survived. The very soil had been stripped off in the titanic fire. He shook his head and checked his radiation monitors, blanching as he did. The suits were more than capable of handling 400 rems per hour, but it would kill any human, stone dead. Or, hell, most cockroaches. The dust was starting to clear and the moon was breaking out to shine on the ground, but there was something odd about it. Under the moonlight, everything was gray, even under the enhancements of the suits that brought it to daytime ambient. It was bright, but still in shades of black and gray. But still, there was something. He toggled a switch, and a patch of white light shone down from his suit on the stripped granite at his feet, and he swore. He swiveled the light around and then walked away from his hole, looking at the ground, and swore again.
"General Horner, this is O'Neill." "Glad to hear your voice, old friend," the general said. "How'd it go?"
"We were underground," O'Neill replied. Horner could almost hear the shrug over the communicator.
"General, about this bomb that just detonated." "Where did you say it came from?"
"Knoxville," Horner replied, puzzled.
"Why?" "I mean, where was it developed?"
"Oak Ridge," Horner said. "And the University of Tennessee, why?"
"That figures. I just thought that you should know that Rabun County is now orange."
"What?" Horner thought about that for a moment.
"The soil in that area?"
"No, General. The soil, the rocks, the fucking mountains. It's all orange. And not international distress orange, boss. It's a redder orange than that." Horner's face turned up a gigantic smile as he looked over at Dr. Castanuelo. The good doctor had just pulled a can of dip out of his back pocket and was reading over the shoulder of one of the techs. He had on a University of Tennessee ball cap and a UT Volunteers windbreaker. Both of them bright orange.
"This is what you get for letting rednecks play with antimatter, boss," O'Neill said.
Horner didn't bother to point out an accident of birthplace. There was no question in his mind that the guy who had just painted half of North Georgia in the colors of one of their bitterest football rivals was well described as a high-tech redneck.
"Dr. Castanuelo," he said sweetly, smiling from ear to ear, "could I have a moment of your time?"
Pruitt had gotten back to work pulling metal storm packs as soon as his vision returned. He had lights that he could use, including a big-ass spot that would have lit up the whole top like day.
but all things considered, he didn't want to be any more of a target than was strictly necessary. Fortunately, the loading system the Shiva repair guys had installed was simplicity in itself, and the crane on 9 had an auto-grappler that worked, unlike the POS he had used in training. All he had to do was snatch the packs out of the hatch, swing the crane, and drop them in the appropriate racks. He was even ahead of the way the storms were running through them. Finally, he was done and decided to take a good look around. The crane had a couple of good visual systems on it and slaves to the main monitors, so he started flipping through images. The best view seemed to be from Monitor 7. It was mounted high enough that it had a better view even than the crane, and it had thermal imaging so sometimes he could pick out details that way. In the distance, he could see streams of Pozzolan still coming down the road from the gap, but they were more spread out and not moving nearly as fast. It looked as if there was a light at the end of the tunnel. O-T-O-H. A few more area denial rounds couldn't hurt. He swept the monitor to the left and noted that he could see just where East Branch came down from the mountains and opened out. He could see the tracks from where the Shiva had come through the last time and sighed. You should only have to take one of these things over the mountains once in your life. Over the mountains, he sung, swinging the monitor around. Take me across the sky. There was a cluster of Pozzolan on the ridge above East Branch, and something about them made him sweep back for another look. He dialed up the magnification, but it wasn't until he hit the thermal imaging system that he was sure what he was seeing. Colonel, he breathed after a moment, you're going to want to take a look out of Monitor 7. Mitchell tapped the control and brought the monitor up on the main view screen. What am I looking at, Pruitt? Check out the group on the ridge to the left. Pruitt sounded dead, as if someone had just ripped his soul out. What's wrong? The colonel asked, dialing up the magnification. The ridge just above East Branch? Yes, sir, Pruitt replied. Switch to IR. Mitchell did, then swore. Those are they human figures? Captain Shan, reload your guns, Mitchell said coldly. Prepare for close fire support. Reeves? Back us off up the hill. Pruitt, get your ass down to personnel. Entrance 1. Yes, sir. The driver checked his monitors and then spun the gun in place, pulling back down the hill. Suspecting what the next drive order would be, he pulled all the way back and pushed the rear up the Savannah Church Hill. He could see the Crunchies arrayed on the hill, panicking as the giant mass of metal backed towards them, but he had other things to worry about, like how much longer he was going to be alive. Romeo 8-6, this is Shiva 9, the colonel said on the division artillery net. I need a brigade time on target box centered on UTM 29448 East, 39107 North. I want everything you've got. Roger, Shiva, the controller called back. That will take a few minutes to effect, and that's not our priority of fire. Do it, Mitchell said. I don't care about your priority of fire. Do it now. Shiva 9, this is Quebec 47. It was Captain LeBlanc's voice. What in the hell are you doing? We're preparing to move forward to East Branch. There was a pause while the local commander assessed his statement. Shiva, that wasn't the plan. Plans change. There's a group of humans that are being used as a mobile feedlot for the Pozzolan, and we're going to get them. Angela Dale had turned to look when the amazing series of flashes had occurred to the south, but since then she had dropped back into her own straitened world. It seemed they had been walking for days since the Pozzolan had captured her near Franklin. She had already lost track of her parents in the desperate retreat in front of the Pozzolan advance, and she was sure that, like everyone in the group who hadn't been able to keep up, they were dead, and probably eaten. She couldn't remember, didn't want to remember, how many had died. The group had been much larger to begin with. Sometimes people were added. Once the group had been broken up, and occasionally a group of confused refugees would join them, including a bunch of Indawi with massive packs and bundles on their backs. She had spoken to the Indawi, a simple greeting she had been taught in school, and the little green aliens had apparently decided she was their best friend and huddled around her as far away from the Pozzolan and other humans as they could get. The leader spoke English, haltingly and with a strange accent, and he had told her that the Pozzolan had brought them from another world, apparently to do engineering for the invaders. They had built some bridges, and then, when the centaurs were forced to retreat, they had been added to the group of humans. He used the Pozzolan term thresh as a mobile pantry, and so it was. For most of the time, instead of adding refugees, one of the escorting Pozzolan at some unseen command would reach into the group and drag people out. Then the knives would descend. The humans in the group had been offered the food from time to time, but even with their stomachs pressing against their backbones, no one had taken the dripping gobbets of flesh that had until moments before been one of their group. Now, though the Pazlines seemed to have plenty of food, groups had come to the rear bearing masses of yellow flesh that could only be coming from the battle to the front. Mostly, she didn't notice anymore. She had retreated into a warm, mental place where nothing could touch her. Someday she would be warm again, safe again. Someday she would be happy again, and all of this would be over. She knew that it was unlikely that place would be this side of heaven, but she really didn't care anymore. She just walked where she was pointed to walk, and sat where she was pointed to sit. So it took her a moment to notice that the artillery fire that had covered the plains had stopped, and that the fire, from whatever had been laying down masses of red death, had stopped as well. What went on in the battle didn't really matter. Nothing was going to save her short of death, and death was beginning to look pretty good. It was being eaten that still seemed bad. But after a moment, the mutters of the people around her and the agitation of the Pazlines cut through her fog. She was afraid it meant they were going to choose another, and she edged to make sure that she was in the center of the group. But quickly it became apparent that something else was going on, and she looked to the north just in time to see, by the light of the fires in the valley and the gibbous moon that had appeared in the east, a mass of metal crest the distant ridge just as the artillery started to fall again. "Pedal to the metal, Reeves," Mitchell shouted. The driver had gunned down Church Hill and back up the far ridge at maximum possible drive, because this was the worst moment of all. For just a moment, the vulnerable underside of the armored gun system was exposed to fire, and if the Pazlines poured fire into it, they were dead. That was where the drive systems and reactors were. Much fire in that area would leave them stopped on the hill, a sitting target for at least 50,000 Pazlines. But the combination of the artillery fire and the speed and surprise of the assault seemed to work. Fire started almost immediately, but by then they were accelerating down the far side.
"Gilzer! Water curtain, now!"
Paul looked over and shrugged. I guess I forgot to mention, we're out. We've only got 5 minutes, and, we used it up before. "Shit!" Mitchell cursed. "Chan!" But the command was unnecessary, as every metal storm opened fire as if for dear life. And it was. The valley was still filled with Pazlines, and even those that were in close combat with the human defenders on the ridge turned to fire at the giant tank as it tore down the slope and up the road towards Savannah. A storm of fire licked out towards it, but Shiva 9 was given as good as it got. Again, the ribbons of red fire lashed out at the Pazlines, jumping from remaining concentration to concentration. The artillery box had opened up a zone of more or less open space, and into that space the Shiva rocketed, belching fire in every direction.
"Mitchell!"
General Samosin seemed a little upset.
"What in the hell are you doing?"
"You wanted a breakout, General?" Mitchell said as rounds careened through the interior of the Shiva.
"You got a breakout!"
"You dumb..."
"You dumb son of a..."
"There's a group of humans by East Branch," Mitchell said. "We're going there, and there ain't nothing that's gonna stop us." Arkady Samosin looked at the radio for a moment and then shrugged. "We'll be right behind you." He turned to the driver of the Bradley he was currently occupying and gestured. "Son, if you don't catch that Shiva before it's halfway across the valley, I'll have you shot." "Yes, sir," the driver said, kicking the armored fighting vehicle into gear. "Not a problem," he added with a feral grin as the track commander cycled his guns. The Bradley was one of the scout systems equipped with a double 7.62 Gatling guns, and it was getting ready to do some harvesting. Samosin brushed his RTO aside and keyed the division command frequency as the Brad lurched into gear. There was garbled conversation coming from a half dozen commanders, but he overrode them. "All units assault. Now, now, now! Follow the Shiva. Forget plans. Forget frag orders. The order is follow the Shiva!"
"Move it!" LeBlanc snarled as he climbed the steps of the tank. And it was a long goddamn way up for female who was just 5 feet tall. Really, she should be on a Brad or a Humvee. More radios and fewer distractions. On the other hand, if she wanted to command her unit, she had to survive.
"But what are we doing?" the commander of Bravo Company called. The idiot was just standing by the Abrams looking around in confusion.
"We're going to Savannah," LeBlanc said, plugging into the vehicle intercom system.
She was about to order the driver forward, but he had already closed his hatch and started the tank forward. It moved with the smooth oiliness that was the hallmark of the Abrams series, and it seemed that nothing could stop it.
Of course, one plasma gun that hit just right would do just fine. There had been improvements in the armor of the Abrams series over the course of the war, but they could still be taken out with plasma or HVM fire, if it was hit right. "Get back to your unit and get it moving!" she screamed at the company commander, then keyed the battalion command frequency. "All units, general breakout! Follow the Shiva!" She looked out of the TC hatch as the tank accelerated up the hillside, and she shook her head. The 147th was a cock-up outfit. That was for sure and for certain, but in the last day or two, something had happened. A new spirit had infected them. They may be cock-ups, but they had led the charge from Balsam Pass to here, where other units had failed. And they seemed to have caught the spirit of winning against the Pauseline instead of just taking it on the chin. Which is why she realized she didn't have to kick her useless company commanders in the ass. On either side, rising out of their holes like an unstoppable tide, the men of the 147th were rising and running forward and screaming. The Pauseline were turning and running before the mass of the Shiva, and the troops of the 147th were going to get some. "What a bloody mess," Mitchell muttered, looking at the monitors. He hadn't really expected support, but he was, by God, getting it. The troops of the division, in some cases, it seemed, without orders, had climbed out of the defensive positions they had occupied for the past several hours and were charging forward. Most of them weren't in vehicles, so they were falling far behind the Shiva, but they were drawing fire away from it and getting slaughtered themselves. It didn't seem to matter, though. Mitchell saw one Bradley crest the ridge and drive right into a concentration of Pauseline, running several of them over. For a moment, the troops inside raved at the aliens with their mounted weaponry, then the troop door opened and they poured out, taking positions around the fighting vehicle and pouring fire into the Pauseline. The aliens, used to throwing themselves onto human defenses, were reacting with shock and apparent fear. It must have seemed to them that the rabbits were attacking the wolves, and it was happening everywhere. The valley was an absolute madhouse. Groups of humans were running down the valley, some of them on the flats and others on the steep ridges along the sides, while a stream of armored fighting vehicles and tanks poured through the gap. Other vehicles, tanks, Bradleys, Humvees, and even some trucks were coming over the ridges where they were negotiable and charging forward, sometimes stopping to pick up infantry, but always, always moving forward. The artillery had gotten totally confused, and rounds seemed to be falling almost at random, some of them into human troops. But even that didn't seem to be slowing them down. "Are you all insane?" Mitchell asked, flipping back to monitor forward. He looked at the rippling waves of Pauseline and the heavy fire coming from them and smiled maniacally. "Yep!"